Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to Gays Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Show your love by following us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our Facebook group at The Gays Revolting.
Support our show and listen to bonus after shows by becoming a patron at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Mikey.
Good morning.
Mardi Gras is done.
Mardi Gras is done.
We're back in Melbourne.
Yes, we are.
We're having fun.
It was a lot of fun. I actually really enjoyed Sydney.
I had such a good time. It was your first time in Sydney at all, wasn't
it? Very, very first time. And it was interesting. Like, people are slightly different. They're not Melbourne, but that's okay.
What did that person come up and say to you on the dance floor?
Oh, okay. So we were at Universal.
Yeah.
And me and Luke were dancing around like idiots because no one else was dancing. And the best music was on.
Yeah.
And I was like living our best lives. And this like big muscle queen turns around and just like, we don't do that here. And I turned around and I was like, well, I'm from fucking Melbourne. So bye. Like, I was so shocked, but at the same time, like, oh, whatever, you wanker. Like,
yeah,
get away from me.
Off, yeah.
But no, yeah.
Sydney was but generally, great. Yes. Very, very yes. fun time. Yes, lovely to meet so many wonderful people.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who came up after the show and had a lovely chat.
We had an entire fucking football team.
Yeah.
There.
That was
the
great.
The Hornets. Was it the Hornets? Yeah.
Oh my God.
They were amazing.
The next day before Kyle and I like left to get our flight, we were walking down the street and we saw them all.
Oh,
like
bless.
Walking down the street in their rainbow socks. I was like, oh my God, hey boys.
Look at you, so friend good. Of the footy team. Now, we've got a couple of interviews in this episode, which is fun. We're going to have Alex from the Department of Home Affairs, mm-hmm. Which is the group that protested Mardi Gras, the Liberal Party at Mardi Gras. And Luke's also going to be interviewing queer pop artist Dorian Electra.
Kyle is away at the moment.
Yes,
so he'll
he's
be away
back
for the next
in
weeks.
South Africa visiting family.
He's visiting his dad, and he's taken Duncan with him as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, very romantic.
Exciting. Yeah. So, no, he'll be back in a few weeks' time, but for now... It's just me, Tom, and Luke.
Get
into it.
Now, there's not going to be an after show after this episode. We were actually going to take this week off completely, but then we got these amazing interviews, so we decided to do this episode.
That's it.
But our after shows will be back to normal as of next week.
Let's get into it.
Now, Mardi Gras weekend has just wrapped up, and as any good political event should be, it wasn't without its controversy. Today, we're joined by Alex, Officer Gentle Intense from the Department of Homo Affairs, a queer activist group based in Sydney. Alex, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
So, at least three protesters from your group were removed from the parade on Saturday night after conducting a peaceful protest in front of the Liberal Party float. Firstly, what exactly were you protesting and were any of you actually arrested?
Yeah, so the Department of Home Affairs was in the Mardi Gras protesting the presence of the Liberal Party float, primarily to bring attention to the Liberal Party's plans to celebrate the 250-year invasion of Captain Cook coming into Kamei, Botany Bay, something called the Encounters Tour, which they're doing with the Maritime Museum, which I'm sure you've heard of is the circumnavigation of Australia of the Endeavour replica.
It blows my mind that someone's sitting in a marketing department thinking that that's a good idea. So correct me if I'm wrong, but they're literally creating a replica of the Endeavour and then circumnavigating Australia, just to remind everyone.
Yeah, so the Endeavour replica exists.
Oh, it does already.
It was built in the 90s.
It
sits at the Maritime Museum in Darling Harbour.
Right,
as a child, I have memories of going on the ship.
School excursions and things.
School excursions. yeah, so it sits there. A lot of tourists get on board, and a lot of students, like young students, get on board. So they're planning on, yeah, circumnavigating this around Australia to commemorate the 250 years since Cook landed, which, of course, is funny because that circumnavigation never happened.
Yes, yeah. Seems like a very good thing to be protesting then.
Yeah.
we believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so were any of you arrested?
Yeah, so three of us were arrested. Mm-hmm. We were taken through the VIP area and detained underneath the grandstand there. Mm-hmm. They were particularly heavy-handed with one of us who had bruises on their arm.
Yeah.
So we were charged with obstruction. It was quite funny. They didn't really know what to charge
you. Yeah. Well, you got essentially just walking down a street, huh?
Yeah,
pretty much. So I got obstruction of traffic.
Uh-huh.
Someone else, one of us got breaching the peace.
Mm-hmm.
So we were given move on orders. So they detained us for about 10 minutes and then we had to leave the area. They took our details, so we might receive fines and further charges.
I am sure you'll have several people put their hand up to help you cover those fines.
Well, yeah.
But they did let several people continue to march, didn't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for the rest of the parade going down, it was quite amazing on the footage, which the Department of Home Affairs got some very good coverage on the SBS flight. You would see the big sign saying "Turn back the floats," followed by the Liberal Party float, which was genius. And the thing that I like about it the most, you know, there's people saying, "Oh, you know, that's not what the point of Mardi Gras is." It's very much the point of Mardi Gras. But also, a lot of people have been saying, and I agree with the spirit in which it was done, was quite a funny sort of, you know, humorous sort of way of protesting, which Mardi Gras has a strong history of doing.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, those images of Fred Niles' head on a plate in the 90s and that sort of thing. It's always been very much a protest, but as our community does, has a bit of a sense of humour about it, which I thought the Department of Home Affairs did a very good job of. So well done with that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's important to us that what we do is performative, it's camp, and it's satirical and it's funny. And it's fun. It's fun for the
It's a good way to get a message out as well. People can go and, you know, chat about it at work and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
At what point, were you there from the start of the parade?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
So we were there during the marshalling time, which was really fun. That's a really beautiful time of part of Mardi Gras. I don't know if any of you have ever been at the parade, but seeing all the groups walking around, everyone's excited and buzzing.
Everyone's checking out each other's floats.
Everyone's pretty high. So we were there from the beginning,
And did you sort of notice any, like, of the attendees, like, as you were protesting, connecting with the message that you were putting out there?
We had a few funny moments. So we had a few different elements. So there was a Department of Home Affairs who were wearing blue coveralls, which are all blinged up and gold. Yeah. And we think it's very apparent that we're a satirical group.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Department of Home Affairs written on our backs. But a lot of people don't get it straight away.
Right, okay.
So we had a few interactions with people kind of coming up to us as if we were the police.
Oh.
We had one amazing moment where we were sitting down and chatting about what we were doing, and this guy kind of like was walking by and stopped in his tracks and looked at us and started walking over to us really purposefully, and then did a stop and was like, Oh, Department of Home Affairs? Wait, so you're not the Department of Home Affairs? And we're like, no. And he was like, oh my God, I was about to come over and tell you all to fuck off. Blah, blah, blah. And we were just like, no, we're joking. He's like, oh, okay. All right, great. And another interaction we had, which was funny, was someone came over and was like, oh my God, I work at the Department of Home Affairs. And we were like, oh, okay. Wow. And she was like, this is amazing. This is so funny. And I don't think she clocked that it was a joke. We were, you know, subverting the Home Affairs. The Marshall Place of Mardi Gras is a strange place. But we also had people coming up and being like, love it. Love the outfits. You look amazing. Love what you're doing. Can't wait. And like people that maybe had seen us in the protest of the Mardi Gras 2 years previously were like, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah. Great.
And did you feel like, I mean, watching it, it seemed like there was overwhelming support coming from the audience as you were coming, leading what looked like leading the Liberal Party. Did you feel overwhelming support coming from the audience as well?
I personally was dressed as Captain Cook.
Oh, yeah, right.
So I wasn't,
yeah,
which is good.
Yeah.
ScoMo, the officer that was dressed as ScoMo, also wasn't getting support. Mm-hmm. So ScoMo was going around pretending to shake people's hands.
Oh, yep, amazing.
So he was getting a lot of resistance, of which course. Is right.
And yeah.
There was a bit of yelling at us because it takes a moment, I think, for the penny to drop for a lot of people yes. in the crowd. Yeah. So they see the Department of Home Affairs officers turning something back, mm-hmm. and then they saw us, the fake Liberal, the replica
yeah,
Liberal
yeah.
Party float. And then so some people start clocking on then, and then it's not until they see the actual Liberal Party float that it's like, oh, it's a protest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so But we were handing out flyers that had information about what we were doing.
Yeah.
So that's really important because people, you see people engage with that.
Yeah.
And you can just see that, okay. Oh, amazing.
I see what's happening, yeah.
And yeah, so support from the crowd as well. Of
yeah.
Like, yeah.
And do you feel like there's been ongoing support since the, like, have you been getting great feedback and that sort of stuff
We've
since the
protest?
We've been
getting really great feedback,
great.
Which has been one of the most excellent Good. Parts. Especially getting feedback from First Nations activists.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Who nice. Have been reposting and sending messages of support to say, yes, this is an amazing action and mm-hmm. thank you and great solidarity. So that's been especially important, but also messages from the queer community of like, you know,
fantastic,
love you guys, love your work, which has been really excellent post-action. Nice. Mm.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned just before that you had done a protest before. It was in 2018 at Mardi Gras. You conducted a similar one, which was in solidarity with refugees affected by the coalition's offshore detention policies. Why do you think they decided to make arrests in 2020 when they didn't bother a couple of years ago?
I think that partly 2 years ago, it was the 40th anniversary.
Uh-huh,
so yep. it was an especially big okay, deal. Yeah. And I think that the police were hyper aware of how bad it would look if they yeah. were arresting queers at Mardi Gras.
On the 40th anniversary,
of
especially.
The 40th
yeah.
anniversary.
Yeah.
I was surprised that we were arrested. I wasn't expecting to be pulled off because it does look so bad. And
yeah,
it has
absolutely.
Brought a lot of attention,
yeah.
which is, you know, a funny flip side of the stress of getting arrested and being handled in that way is that you do get a lot of media attention because the media yeah. loves an arrest. So I was surprised that they did that. I think it was... we held Taylor Square for a really long time.
Yeah.
It was like 4 minutes. It's quite funny.
Amazing.
If you watch the live footage,
yeah.
it's pretty awkward. Like, the camera doesn't know where to go.
Well,
the host,
a friend of the podcast, Joel Creasy, was hosting the thing, and they were sort of going, oh, well, this is
okay.
cool. I haven't got my notes about this. And like, okay, turn back the plates. And so you guys got so much airtime on
we
there.
Did,
right. And then
did,
they sort of, I think that whoever was producing must have clocked that it was a protest. And all of a sudden they just cut to Zoe Kingsma, who's standing down at, like, somewhere else. And they're like, who have you got with you then, Zoe? And she's like, absolutely no one. But that's great. You know, that's
it was
about.
Very funny. So I think maybe part of the arrest was that we held it for so long.
Mm.
And they obviously made a decision. I mean, we were starting to move on.
Yeah.
So it was completely unnecessary. We weren't posing a risk to anyone.
Yeah.
So.
As an activist group and as a protester, getting arrested, do you consider that a bit of a success or is it more of a failure?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I'm very aware as a white Australian not to romanticise being arrested like certain groups do, certain climate groups do. I think it's really important not to, romanticise that. Like,
that's a really good point, actually. I thought of that, yeah.
We certainly did not plan to get arrested. In the moment, it felt like a failure. I felt really disappointed that we'd been pulled out of the parade. Afterwards, though, seeing how much media attention that brought was like, okay, the flip side of that happening is that we are getting a lot of attention. There's a lot of heat on the New South Wales Police Force. A positive coming out of it is that we are now contributing to this conversation about whether police should be at Mardi Gras, which is really is great to kind of be contributing to that conversation. So I guess it's a bit of a mix. Maybe in the end it kind of turned into a bit of a positive thing because it brought a lot of attention and brought up the roots of Mardi Gras and how it began as a violent, very, very violent scene against queer people.
Yeah,
I guess another, I don't want to call it a silver lining, but another opportune thing that happened with it, with that happening at Taylor Square was you were right in front of that big VIP grandstand.
That's right.
And so there was so
That's
much
it,
like
yeah.
I saw Adam Bant posting it and a whole lot of other people sitting in the bandstand were able to film those arrests and post on social media, which I think drew more attention to the protest, which, you know, strange way is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the official photographers are sitting there. And a lot of them were taking photos. Some needed a bit of encouragement. Like, why are you not taking photos of this arrest? Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is important
That's
to capture. So...
Well, the protests did go a bit viral, in part due to the Greens leader, Adam Bandt, which you just mentioned, because he reposted the video on Twitter, which is amazing. Mm. Did you receive any sort of follow-up from Adam or anyone from his party?
Not that I have been aware of.
Okay.
I haven't been completely across the social media platforms that we're on. Jenny Leong, another Greens leader, posted a video as well. She was there as well. So we've got support from Adam Bandt, Jenny Leong, in that way. But well done, Adam Bandt.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. And everyone else that was sharing it. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't know if you saw Samuel Leighton Dore, the queer artist, who did a beautiful picture of your team member. I loved that. That was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was actually
too.
The first thing I saw about it. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see it until yesterday, and I was really chuffed.
Yeah, it was really lovely
to see that. Yeah, beautiful work.
Now, there was also a separate protest going on at the Mardi Gras by a socialist group called the Socialist Alternative, who were chanting, "Fuck the ALP," as the Labour float passed by. And, of course, Federal Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese then gave them the finger, which he's since talked about on the news, and said he doesn't regret it, and also felt that those people shouldn't be chanting against the ALP, and also felt that you guys should not have been protesting the Liberal Party. What's your take on that?
Look, I can get behind a message like fuck the ALP.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, our focus is largely on refugee policy, government policy, as well as, working in solidarity with First Nations people. And the ALP does not have an excellent track record. A lot of their refugee policy has been horrendous. So I absolutely can get behind a message. If we had more people, we'd be protesting the ALP as well. Let's not forget that they don't have a great track record in terms of queer rights either. Better than the Liberal Party, but they also, they're not great either. So I welcome any kind of critique of political parties in the Mardi Gras. I think it's absolutely the place to have these political conversations. As far as Albo giving the finger to the Socialist Alternative, I don't know.
That's a reaction he had. I was just a bit disappointed to see him then in a press conference sort of backing that up and saying that he didn't think it was the place for it, and that that you guys shouldn't have been doing what you were doing and that sort of stuff. That was sort of what disappointed me. I thought he could have just...
It's interesting who thinks that they have a say in what happens at Mardi Gras. We had the police putting out a comment that they were disappointed in our actions, which we felt was a big tick of approval. But also, you know, who do you think you are to be dictating what happens at Mardi Gras? This is not your place. This is not your parade. So the Department of Home Affairs' view on police is very much aligned with groups that are working in this space, particularly Pride and Protest. The police force is an inherently violent institution that should not be welcome in the space of Mardi Gras. I mean, this is contentious. I have spoke to some 78ers that remember the first time that the police were in the Mardi Gras, and that was a really emotional moment for them because it felt like a really historical shift.
And I guess there's also the argument that some people have that the more queer people in the police force, the better the police force is going to be.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument. I mean, it's a thing about reform or undoing these kind of institutions, right? So I would say that from an abolitionist point of view, which I personally have, it doesn't matter how many queers are in the police force because it is an inherently violent institution that, you know, targets First Nations people and is a force that is harmful to communities. So from that perspective, the police should not be there. And it's the same if you're a queer police officer. You can march in Mardi Gras in another capacity. And again, from an abolitionist point of view, we should be able to regulate our own spaces and that we should not be relying on the police. They think they're there to keep us safe, which I absolutely disagree with. We don't need them there. They're not welcome there. And for many people, they're an extremely triggering and stressful presence to have in a queer space. Like I said, I think that we need to be working towards keeping ourselves safe. And I'm not sure exactly how that would look. I don't know if that looks like volunteers from the queer community that are trained in de-escalation tactics and are trained in ways to keep people physically safe. I haven't I haven't personally experienced any homophobic attacks at Mardi Gras. I think there's a critical mass of people that are there to celebrate the queer community. So I believe that if there was any kind of anti-protest or attack, that I believe that we would be able to all protect ourselves and to jump into each other's defence.
For sure.
I think we just need to move away from relying on the police to regulate these spaces, and also remembering that for many people, the police are the ones doing the violence, and they're made less safe by the presence there. So I think we need to hold those things at the same time and remember that, yes, there is, you know, there's a risk from homophobic attacks for sure, but the police are still a very homophobic institution.
Yeah.
They're the ones that dragged us off, that bruised one of our officers. And to also remember that, you know, who is made less safe by the police presence, and that is often Aboriginal people, that we need to be really centering in our queer communities and celebrations.
So what do you think that sort of Mardi Gras is the best place for, I guess, queer people to bring up other political issues and other issues involving, like, Indigenous people and, like...
I think going back to the roots of Mardi Gras, it was a radical queer protest.
Yeah.
So keeping that spirit alive, despite the corporatization and commercialization that has happened with Mardi Gras, is something that's really important. 2 years ago in our first action, we had 78ers yelling from the site, like from the crowd, making Mardi Gras political again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that felt like a beautiful bit of support.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So for me, keeping that spirit alive is a reason to be satirical and subversive and playful at Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
And another, I mean, in terms of First Nations issues or refugee issues, I think that these are issues that should be very central to the queer community for a few reasons. I mean, firstly, there are, of course, Aboriginal queer people in our cohort. There are queer refugees. There are other, you know, in terms of intersectionality, queers are everywhere.
Absolutely.
So they're very much part of our cohort. Also, as queers living on stolen land, I feel like it's essential to always kind of have thinking around how to work in solidarity with First Nations people and always be, you know, being led by Indigenous people, but really putting that in the forefront of what we do and our work. Yeah. So I think that Mardi Gras, I mean, you know, one of the chants from the 1978 Mardi Gras, as people were getting arrested, was stop police attacks on gays, women's and gays, women and blacks.
Yeah.
Which is a really, you know, it's been there from the beginning, this solidarity between different marginalised groups. So really keeping that spirit alive. And of course, Mardi Gras is huge. It's a huge event. So many people go. And it's broadcast, and a lot of people watch it. So it's
I don't
really
think we've got space for a Golden Girls float, then we have space to have the discussion about First Nations people and refugees as well. Yeah,
that's right. And in particular, this year, the theme of Mardi Gras was What Matters. So protest matters, you know, resisting celebrations of invasion matter, conversations about who should be in our queer spaces. You know, that's a conversation to have that's, I think, nuanced, but a really good one to contribute to.
You mentioned corporate sponsorship and just in there. What are your views on allowing corporate floats to participate in the parade? And do you think that they're taking the place of smaller community groups, or are they allowing the parade to happen, which is opening the door for community groups? What's your take on that?
My personal take on that is that my queer politics are very much aligned with anti-capitalist politics. So I see the corporatization of Mardi Gras as not completely aligned with radical queer politics. I don't really understand why people like Qantas, ANZ, Netflix, all these big companies feel, I mean, I think they're there because they see it as an amazing marketing opportunity and as an advertising opportunity. And I understand that a lot of them do have queer employees and
with internal pride networks and things like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah, and they have policies about supporting queer people. So I understand that. However, I don't think it should be a marketing opportunity. I think it should be very much community-based. There are still a lot of community groups in there, which is excellent to see. I think they should be first and foremost. I'd like to... If the corporates have to be in the Mardi Gras, which I don't believe they should be, but maybe they should be at the back.
Yeah.
To really prioritise those community groups that are doing
One thing that I kind of like, which is sort of just starting, and I hope it takes off a bit more if we are going to continue to have corporate sponsorship, is companies like Amy, who, instead of having their own float, the last couple of years have sponsored the Broken Heel Festival.
The Broken Heel Festival
didn't have enough money to bring their own float to Mardi Gras, so Amy sponsored theirs, and then that allowed them, so, which I sort of feel like is a bit more of a moral way of doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, maybe not putting yourself first and foremost is good. I mean, it's obviously a shame that these community groups need to get corporate sponsorship. I mean, if you look at footage of the earlier Mardi Gras, you know, not the original Mardi Gras, but as it's evolved, it's so beautiful to see how kind of loose it is. And you see this beautiful creativity. Police aren't there. It's more self-regulated. The crowds are out of the way. But there's just a looseness and, people making costumes. There's not these big, shiny corporate floats. And there's just more of a sense of creativity at a community level that is really beautiful. And we can still have that. I mean, it doesn't have to be this huge tourist event. I mean, people can come, but it doesn't have to have all the shininess, all of the money that goes into these floats. Because you hear the argument that, well, at the level that we're at now, we need the corporates to help pay for it. And it's like, well, I mean, we don't really.
Well, no. Like, it's about selling 20,000 tickets to an after party for $250 each.
Yeah, sure.
So is it of your opinion that the Liberal Party float should be excluded from Mardi Gras? And if so, what do you say to queer liberals or supporters who then end up being excluded based on their conservative views?
The Department of Home Affairs very much values inclusivity. And having that at the core of the Mardi Gras parade is excellent.
Yeah.
However, we believe that if you're an individual or a group or a party that doesn't have justice at the core of what you do, then you shouldn't really be given a space at events like Mardi Gras. I don't think it's to say that people with conservative views that are queer or gay shouldn't march.
Totally.
They can march, but not as a representative of the Liberal Party. I think it's important to remember that the Liberal Party, firstly, in the instance of this protest, are planning on celebrating 250 years of invasion since James Cook arrived in Botany Bay. They're going to circumnavigate the Endeavour, which is going to traumatise First Nations communities around the continent. And I'll mention now that there's amazing resistance happening, which the Department of Home Affairs is very much being led by and working to support amazing resistance by First Nations communities around the continent to stop this from happening. So that's one thing that the Liberal Party is doing.
Yeah.
Then there's their horrendous refugee policies, of course. And then let's not forget that 2 years ago, the Liberal Party put us through the postal survey, which was a very traumatic time in the queer community. It was awful. I don't need to explain, I'm sure, to your how bad that was. We all know how bad that was. And this is also the party that right now is trying to introduce the religious discrimination bill, which will actively harm the queer community.
Absolutely.
Which will harm women and other marginalised groups. So to have them in the celebration of Mardi Gras just does not seem acceptable to us for these reasons.
Do you think it's more of an issue that they marched as the Liberal Party and not as like queer liberals?
Look, to me, any kind of representation of the Liberal Party is not acceptable. And that's also, I think, resonates with the crowd. Like, the Liberal Party gets a lot of boos.
It is quite jarring seeing them coming down.
Yeah, absolutely. And for all those reasons that I just kind of outlined, I'm not saying that queers that have conservative politics can't march, but march in different floats. Why do you feel the need to bring the Liberal Party, a party that's actively harming marginalised communities, into this celebration? I think being queer does not erase all of the privileges that you have if you're supporting a party like the Liberal Party. It doesn't get you a free pass into all spaces. And I think it's really important to have these conversations.
So your group has obviously come back in a great way in 2020. And I'm sure you guys want to keep up your momentum. So what's sort of next for your group?
We're going to have a little period of talking about this action and thinking about what we did well and what we could do better. So we'll regroup and then start planning. I mean, our main activities leading up to April 29 will be there's a convergence that's being planned by First Nations communities in Sydney, Botany Bay or Kamay, Botany Bay, 26th of April until the 6th of May, mm-hmm. To protest the celebration of invasion and genocide. Mm-hmm. So that's called the Gwigal Bidjigal Resistance. So really what we're going to be doing as a Department of Homo Affairs is getting the message out there, really getting the queer community, to engage with this protest, mm-hmm. to think about how they're going to support this protest and to really start getting organised. So First Nations organising being done by the Redfern Aboriginal Tent Embassy, mm-hmm. And the Autonomous Collective Against Racism, mm-hmm. which can be found on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So really supporting their actions. Last week there was an action at the Maritime Museum that was organised mm-hmm. by these two groups that was protesting. So that's where the Endeavour is stopped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So protesting the plan for the circumnavigation, mm-hmm. And protesting it even being there in Gadigal land.
Yeah.
So a bunch of us went down to that protest, mm-hmm. Which very much was helped inform the Mardi Gras protest as well. So, yeah, really just kind of being led by those groups. Mm-hmm. And getting the word out there in our queer community and using the platform that we've now been given from attention from the Mardi Gras protest to really get to centre those First Nations voices, which is really important because that's where the focus really needs to be.
And if people want to get to follow the Department of Homo Affairs and keep in touch with what you're all up to and support your future movements, how can they do that?
We have an Instagram, the Department of Homo Affairs. Mm-hmm. We're on Twitter. We have a Facebook page coming soon.
Heaven.
We're going to have a communique published on Overland in the next few days, hopefully.
Fantastic.
We're often recruiting.
Great.
And we'll be hopefully doing wider call outs for people that want to don a Department of Homo Affairs uniform.
Yep.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Fantastic. We look forward to seeing a lot more of the department in the future.
Thank you so much.
Alex, so much for coming. Thanks so much for coming in. It's a real treat to have you here so soon after Mardi Gras. We're very lucky to have you, so thank you very much.
Great. Thank you all so much. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today we're joined by Dorian Electra, an LA-based queer pop star who Paper Magazine have described as launching a pop war on heteronormativity. Dorian, you're in town performing two live shows, and thank you so much for stopping by our Vespa repair studio.
Thank you so today. Much for having me. Can't wait to get my Vespa. Well, if I need to break it first, then I can get it repaired here.
There's a couple to work on before we start the show, and we can upload that to our Instagram and stuff. But really appreciate you coming in. You've amassed a huge queer cult following around the world, and you're part of this movement, I think, of sort of modern pop artists that are doing really deep music with queer aesthetics and some historical context in there as well. Do you see yourself as pushing sort of a queer agenda through your art? Is that how you view what you do?
I think that's definitely a part of it. I think like using pop music as a way to get across all kinds of ideas that push the boundaries, whether it be gender, sexuality, politics, aesthetics. Pop music's a great vehicle for challenging people's ideas because, you know, you start with something that's so accessible and made to be fun and catchy and for anyone to enjoy, you know, just on a surface level, like a catchy beat, a catchy song. And then through that, you can channel all kinds of new things. And then people, I think, are more open to it because it's already made to be accessible and open, you know?
Absolutely. Like, we've talked about Hannah Gadsby's comedy show. And I think queer artists have been doing this for a while. If you frame something in something in a way that people can easily understand it or digest it to begin with, you can kind of sneak in some deeper messaging and some more complex ideas into that meal.
Like, I'll get comments on YouTube that will be like from some random person that my video was recommended to them somehow, and they'll be like, ooh, like, I don't know if this is a man or a woman, or like, what the hell's going on, but the beat slaps or stuff like that, you know? Or people that will be like, it's like one of the, like, I see these comments all the time. They'll be like, at first I was like, ooh, this is disgusting, like, who is this person? Then I was like, beat kind of slaps. Then I'm like, wait a second, are they hot? Now I'm questioning my sexuality. Like,
totally.
Seriously, those comments would be like, first I was like this, then I was like this, now I'm like this. I've seen those like so many times on all of my videos that I'm just like, this is amazing. Like, I can't wait to, you know, see when I can have my stuff getting out to even more people, you know, and seeing what the reaction is. This is so fascinating.
I think about 5 of those comments were me, because I went through a very complex journey when I saw your first music video. It's like, I think I'm a bit turned on by this. I don't know why, you know? I love, my favorite thing is watching like drag queen makeup tutorials and reading the comments. Because you see that journey where they work out about halfway through the video that it's a man, or it's like not the gender that they're like sort of they're presenting, you know, and you can see the deep emotional turmoil in those YouTube comments.
Totally. It's crazy that people even comment those things, but it's amazing to see like their transformation even just in a comment is nuts. Yeah.
A banger of a beat gets people on board with a lot of things.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's how I got people to join Scientology for ages. I just wrote a really, really, really good banger. Yeah. No, I'm joking. Okay.
I thought you were saying that the Scientology was using that to get people. I was like, really? I've watched all, like, every Scientology documentary I can find. I haven't come across that. Like, I need to learn more.
Imagine
also,
if
I like just
like
got off a zillion hour flight too. I'm like, I'll believe anything at this point. I would join Scientology if you put it in front of me right now.
Yeah, just listen to this song for a little
bit.
Sure,
tell me more. Oh, really?
I watched your music videos that were more sort of like queer history based. There's a really cool one about vibrators, which is probably not work friendly. But you did that with, is it Refinery?
Refinery 29.
29. How important to you with having a platform is it to sort of pass on some sort of history lessons to the queer community?
I think it's so important. I think history is definitely one of my favorite topics, something that even when I'm doing not explicitly educational music now really influences my aesthetics and all of my ideas and song topics and stuff. I think it's so important to understand like where we've been and the history of the oppression of queer people and women and trans people and people of color, to understand how we can make things better for the future.
Yeah.
And
I think because we don't have like queer school, you know, I kind of forget or take it for granted that not everyone has that thirst to go out and look for the knowledge, you know, and you think, well, how else are they going to learn about where we've been and some of the toughest stuff, but also some of the really interesting stuff, like the history of the vibrator. There were some really weird ones in that video that I saw, like I didn't understand a rounder sort of one.
The one that looks like a frisbee kind
of.
There was one from the 50s that was like this vibrating disc, and it was so interesting because with vibrators, well, it first started out being like a treatment for hysteria. It was like basically this condition that they would say that women of like a frail constitution, it's a very Victorian era thing. And it was always like upper class women, you know, like having this like emotional turmoil and other like just like it could be any symptom of being like dissatisfied in Victorian society if you were a woman. If you were overly emotional, you know, in this like stoic Victorian period, they didn't think about it as an orgasm because they didn't think it was sexual, but they would prescribe like this, like the doctor would do these like circular, like quick circular motions on their genital region. Until they had this paroxysm. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it basically was an orgasm. They didn't think about it as sexual. Anyway, so that was like how you cured hysteria, was basically by making these people orgasm. And then they invented vibrators to make it easier. And then that kind of got all brushed under the rug when they were like, oh, wait, maybe this is sexual. And so then vibrators were marketed as like something you would put on your face to help maintain circulation and youth and youthful appearance and get rid of fatigue and everything. But it was always like with this winking, like, we know what you're really using these for kind of thing. And you can look at it, and if you read the ads and the marketing from that era, it's so fascinating to see. Like, it was just an unspoken thing about like women's female sexuality. It was very, very interesting.
It's sort of behind a curtain kind of thing, but we all wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know about it. Speaking of history and your own history, you were sort of introduced to queer ideas or the queer community at a younger age. So your mother actually dated women when you were a teenager. Did you feel like having an introduction into that world at a younger age meant that... you sort of were more confident when you started to explore your own sexuality?
Totally. Yeah, I feel so lucky to have had exposure to the idea of queerness at such a young age, because I feel like I was very lucky in that I didn't have to go through any kind of painful, like, coming out or anything. Like, it always just seemed to me like, oh yeah, sexuality is kind of fluid, you know, like, that idea was just so normal to me. And I think that I didn't have really any of the like internalized homophobia that so many people do and so many of my friends do and stuff. And then my parents were also kind of like able to be there for some of my other friends in high school and stuff. Like, one of my best friends in high school wanted to dress in drag to go to prom, and so my mom lent him her bra and helped him stuff it, like, did his makeup and all this stuff. And, you know, we were like 17 and
cut
stuff.
The pads.
And, yeah, you know, it was like, yeah, it was really cool. And you know, so they've always been supportive of not just like me, but my friends and stuff too.
That's so amazing.
Yeah,
I was talking to a friend last night about the kind of second adolescence that, especially in the gay male community, we have, because during our initial adolescence, we're suppressed and we don't explore our own sexualities until much later in life, and it just seems like, yeah, hearing that, it's like so amazing to think that there are people out there that don't have to have that sort of sheltered adolescence and then a second one when they get older and can just have a supported family, and that they provided that for other queer kids as well is, yeah.
Yeah, I feel really lucky, and I feel like it's kind of like what I want to do is to, in some way, like through my art and music, be able to provide even just some of that kind of feeling of like being supported, you know, with who you are to my fans and listeners and stuff, because I feel like so much of why I've been able to do what I've been able to do is because I had such a supportive upbringing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so many people don't have that. So I feel like it's just something that I want to let them know, like, you're okay and you're loved and all of that, you know?
Mm. Drag can bring families together.
Yeah.
RuPaul was right.
Yeah.
So you've got a new music video. Was it last week that Guyliner came out?
Yes, it was on last Friday.
Last Friday? One of the words was, this sounds like a Grindr profile line, is putting the mask in mascara. And, you know, a lot of your videos and your aesthetics play with gender. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about how masculine tropes inform your identity as an artist and kind of the ideas behind that with your work?
Totally. I mean, since I was a kid, I always had male idols, always looked up to like male rock stars and, you know, all those kinds of things resonated with me personally a lot more than even like Oscar Wilde and stuff like that was a big hero of mine kind of. And that was kind of who I looked up to. And I always loved the like flamboyant masculinity, like Liberace or even like Austin Powers, even though it's a fictional character, or, you know, like Mick Jagger and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I loved flamboyant things, but from like a masculine perspective. And then I also like, you know, I still love makeup and all of that too. And I love feminine things too. But somehow for me personally, like being able to feel grounded in the idea that I can have it all, you know, I don't have to feel restricted to one or the other. I don't have to feel like a fraud for not wanting to be some super butch man all the time, or, you know, or some super like feminine, you know, woman or whatever, you know, that I can kind of put those things together in any combination that makes me feel comfortable. And once I unlocked that in my own mind, I think my art really flourished and felt really like free and authentic aesthetically. And yeah, that's kind of my journey with that. Like with Guyliner, it's like, you know, from the perspective of a guy that enjoys wearing makeup.
Yeah.
And, you know, to say that like you don't have to be, you don't even have to be queer to be, you could be a cis het guy and totally want to wear makeup. And that's totally cool. And maybe chicks dig it. And, you know, like that's the whole vibe of that. It's like, you know, you don't even have to be, the queerness isn't even a factor with that. And I think that there's so much, like, I think there's still so much freedom that needs to be expanded for even like cis het people.
Totally.
You know, and that's a part of like doing away with the patriarchy and making more options open for all people, you know?
Some of them are starting to tiptoe into. I've seen a few guys experiment with the nail polish now, cis het guys, and you're like, you're starting to figure out that this is actually fun and it's another, I always used to get really frustrated with the male standards because I could see my female friends just had more options in terms of expressing themselves with makeup and colors.
Totally.
And I was like, I can't coordinate my, I'm not allowed to coordinate my nails with my outfit. Like, I really want to do that.
Yeah.
And you do get to a point where you go, oh, there's no one's actually stopping me from doing this. Totally.
It's interesting to think actually for like straight men, like how, you know, much of a hurdle it really is, because it's like, if you do anything in that realm, people are like, oh, they assume you're gay, or they assume that you're hiding something.
Yeah.
Or even people in the queer community will then, like, if you're an artist, they'll come after you being like, oh, you're appropriating queer aesthetics.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of this thing where it's like, there's a point to that, and there's definitely some validity in that, and I think all the sides should be examined. But then it's also like, aren't we putting people in a box even further? And aren't we like furthering this idea that by stepping outside of these norms that you are automatically gay? Like, isn't that just as oppressive in a way?
Totally.
You know, I think it's really a complex issue. I think it's good to examine it from all perspectives whenever you can.
And it sticks with people. I talk about my best friend a lot, JB. He's a straight ally and friend of the podcast. And the other day we were going to go see a gig and I help him dress. Like, I was like, put on this shirt, and like we went and got a nice shirt and nice slacks, and he dressed up really nice, and we did the one over before we were going, and he'd put like his dirty old work shoes on. And I said, JB, why aren't you just wearing like the nice boots you have? And he said, oh, I did, but then I looked too nice, so I didn't want it to look like I was trying. And I took them off and put my work shoes on. And I went, why are you trying not to look nice? Like, where does that come from? And it turns out in his head, he's like, that would be, people might think I'm gay. Like, from primary school level conversations, as a 33-year-old man, it still subconsciously impacts the shoes that he wears.
Totally.
It's like,
that's crazy. Yeah.
Mm. So that's my JB shout out.
No, and I think about that all the time. Do you remember the term metrosexual?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was an interesting one. And that kind of, to me, harkens back to like this, like, I think of it as like the 2006, 2007 MySpace era.
Love it.
Of like, with like emo and scene kid. And that's kind of what the Guyliner music video is is like referencing, you know, where it's like, in a lot of ways, those people were making major strides for like cishet guys to like, you can be like really hot and in this emo band and be wearing like quote unquote women's jeans from Hot Topic and eyeliner and nail polish and like have your hair dyed and like, and you know, put a ton of hairspray and you like straighten it every day, but you're still like this like total hunk, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's
I
think that, you know, even though those kids also got like really made fun of and stuff too, but I feel like that was a really important time for in some way expanding the idea of what masculinity can be and look like and mean,
and that it's an okay thing to care about your appearance. I think is that fucks me up all the time when I'm like, you actually have trained yourself not to care about your appearance. Like, that's the funnest part of getting dressed and like going out.
So
it's a really complicated thing that's starting in at least our local community, are these definitions of what drag is and isn't. And when I've shown people your music videos or read some of the comments on them, the closest thing people relate it to is, you know, someone doing drag.
Mm-hmm.
Do you define some of your performance style as, and your makeup style as drag, or do you see it as something else?
I mean, now I don't.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like it's just me, and I feel like that's kind of the more powerful statement, and that feels more authentic to just me in general now, is like, it's just me. In the past, though, I used to identify for some period of time as like oh, like a drag king or just a drag performer, in that like I like to play with gender and I like to use makeup and costume. But I think that was also when I was really experimenting with my own gender identity, and the drag community was a huge part of that, especially in Chicago, where I kind of like I went to school and kind of like started out as an artist and stuff there. And all of those people and the whole scene were really influential. And that was where I heard people using they them pronouns for the first time. Yeah. I was dressing in like for my Refinery 29 music videos in like hyper feminine outfits.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
and feeling like this isn't me. And then once I, you know, was like, oh, I'm doing drag. Like I'm dressing as a woman, but I'm doing drag, you know? And that was super empowering to think about it like that, because it felt like it just gave me more agency over my identity and myself. But then since then, now I feel like when people, I don't like it, you know, I don't identify as a drag king. I identify as gender fluid and just like myself, you know?
Yeah.
And when I hear people call me drag king, I don't like that idea, because I feel like they assume that it means like, oh, I'm a woman dressing as a man. But like, to me, it's really not, it's not like that at all. I'm just gender fluid. It's like just my everyday expression is that way. So I think it's great for opening up conversations and for teaching people. And I think like the idea of drag in and of itself is like someone dressing as a different gender or something other than their the one they were assigned at birth, that's already radical enough for most people. And I think it's a really powerful tool. I'm so happy to see drag becoming more and more in the mainstream. It's just amazing for like our culture and everything, and it's opening so many doors. But I think that the kind of the step beyond that in terms of people exploring their gender identity is to just have that fluidity and not be defined by I am this dressing as this, you know, which is not how a lot of people view drag in a way more fluid way than that. But I'm just talking about like kind of the mainstream interpretation of it, you know.
Absolutely. I think it's similar to the heterosexual perspective we were talking about. Sometimes we can be really quick to box drag into like, but it's this way. And spending a bit more time with AFAB queens and non-binary performers, I've realized that drag is this, at least to them, an unnecessary word. They're performing and they're doing their own thing. And, you know, Ruby, who did our, helped with our photo shoot, Ruby Slippers is just Ruby Slippers, you know, I don't...
Yeah.
And it is just kind of a box if you start to call certain things just like, oh, it's this type of drag or... Yeah, I like the direction that drag is going into this beautiful, messy, you know, blurry area of gender. And
it'll take a while for, like, the shows and stuff to catch up to that, you know, because it's, like, it's already, like with the exclusion of, like, you know, like, trans women and stuff from the show.
Yeah.
Like, the mainstream is still just getting adjusted to the initial idea. And I think, like, gradually it can become more and more progressive and more open and more fluid. Mm. And other forms of other competing things will pop up as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think overall it's great that drag's being introduced to the mainstream and opening people's minds. So all kind of possibilities.
I want to tell you, I'm a bit of a music nerd and I like watching music trends as well. And so you've just released your first proper quote unquote album, Flamboyant. But there's been a trend of like buzz singles now and artists that just release little EPs and things like that. Do you think albums as like an artist still matter, or do you think in this streaming Spotify world that we just consume music as like individual singles? How do you feel now that Flamboyant's out?
I feel like releasing my album was absolutely huge for me. I think the traditional parts of the industry, press and touring, still operate very much on the album cycle. Yeah. I also love the idea of putting together a body of work that is one big body of work that has a theme and has an aesthetic. Like look at like Caroline Polachek's album, you know, just like how aesthetically consistent all of that is. And it just feels like this big world that she's built that's so fun to like think about and see all the music videos, especially because I'm a huge music video person, obviously, and I love them so much. And a lot of times I think people treat them as like a throwaway thing, or people like, you know, it's very last minute. And there's so many mediocre or just not good music videos out there. But then when an artist does it right, it can be like amazing and just absolutely. really help build their whole world. And so to me, I still love albums, but it's also not right for every artist. You know, some artists are more about like the bop, like just the like, you know, but then I am also interested in doing more like off the cuff, like releases and like a little EP.
It's kind of fun,
you know, here or there. But then I'm still excited for like my next album and it being this huge thing, you know.
So, I still love that world where Do you remember when you'd go like buy CD singles and there were like three different parts with the B-side?
Yeah.
And then it would sort of like complement the album.
And sometimes a remix or something.
Yeah. I used to fucking love that. But the idea of like an album as a package, you know, and you start at that end and you finish over here. I definitely think it's something that still needs to exist, even with Spotify, if you're pulling stuff out and chucking them. Caroline's on all, Pang is on all of my playlists. That first song, it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
I think I would get in trouble if I didn't bring up Charlie XCX because I mention her in... I mention JB and Charlie XCX in every episode of the show. And you were on Pop 2. You were on Fembot. And I feel around that time there was a really cool movement of artists in the sort of PC music adjacent world really pushing the boundaries of what pop music is, and we're still sort of seeing that peter into the mainstream now. Did you feel like a kind of pop music camaraderie with Charlie and the PC music crew and the producers and things like that?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I looked up to all of those people for a long time, and so it was totally a dream to get to work with them. And yeah, I mean, that Pop 2 was such a special moment. Like, I mean, I knew that it was big at the time, but I felt so lucky to be a part of it. But then, like, looking back still, it's just like all the people that Charlie brought together for that.
So many features.
Like iconic people. And it's crazy because I feel like, you know, she's really one of those few people that has such a sense of like community building in that way and lifting up other artists. Like, I was like nobody, you know, like I barely had any music out and stuff, but like, you know, being able to have to be a part of that, and then to be able to, like, we did all these after parties that were called Fembot Fantasy, like in the US, and like, you know, being able to like just continue that on. We brought on like local drag queens and local pop acts, like in all these different cities.
That's
in the US.
Good.
Yeah, it was just amazing, and it just felt like it really kept this vibe going, and especially in a very, very queer vibe too, which is so cool. Like, I mean, Charlie is one of the best allies in music that like the queer community and queer artists have. Especially because when so many artists actually, you know, take from like the queer aesthetic and stuff, to have an artist that actually uplifts other queer artists in such a huge way is so important. And the music is obviously just so incredible and boundary pushing. And then everyone wants to, like, after she put out her mixtapes, it was like everybody was like, I'm doing a mixtape. I'm doing a mixtape. Like, obviously, that's something that's from like the rap world and stuff too. Yeah. But in terms of like a pop context, it was like she's just such a trendsetter, you know?
Yeah. And I think the spotlight that it threw onto other artists, you're right, in the queer community, like Pablo Vittar.
Even Kim Petras, the boost that was for her, which I think was really cool. Yeah, and Pablo Vittar, absolutely.
Yeah, it didn't feel like that appropriating or like,
oh, no, not at all.
Get the pink dollar kind of thing. It just felt like these are the people that are making sick music, and you introduced to their music and Alma and things like that through the mixtapes and her playlist on Spotify. And it would have been amazing to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Do you support her on tour as well?
This past fall I supported her all across Europe and then in the US and stuff too.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. That was really fun. It was really, like, on the tour bus together. It was really fun.
Thank you again so much for coming in to chat with us. I really have enjoyed getting to pick your brain a bit today. Where can our listeners find your work? Where's the best place for them to check you out?
They can check me out on Instagram at Dorian Electra. It's DorianElectra. I got Twitter. I'm even on TikTok now. I'm even trying to do that TikTok life, my friend. Yeah, Spotify, Apple Music, all that good stuff.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was so fun talking to you.
Yeah, cheers.
Well, that's a wrap for today.
Yes, fascinating interviews. Yeah. Very, very lucky to have both those people on the show. Now, of course, if you want to get in touch with us, you can follow us on all our Instas at Gays Revolting Pod, Twitter's Gays Revolting.
Yeah, Facebook,
just Google, you know. Google it, you'll work it out.
You'll find us.
Hey, Mikey.
Hey.
I love you.
I love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.